You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Max Verstappen will not be moved. He heads to Abu Dhabi with a fighting chance still to win it all.
Leaving from this weekend, Max is the guy with all the candy. He's very happy. And Lando is the kid with no candy. He's very sad.
McLaren just didn't guess what anyone else would do.
They wanted to keep it fair between the two drivers. That's the only explanation I could give it.
It shouldn't be reactionary. They have to make their own decision, and they've just called this massively wrong.
Speechless. I don't have any words.
You've done everything as close to perfect as possible, and you're expecting that back from the team as well, and you don't get it. A thing that is very hard to accept.
The mental pressures are all on Lando. They've been etching his name in it, and then they scrub it out and say, oh, this could be anyone's now.
When someone smells blood in Formula One, your life gets much more difficult.
It's Max, and he just has this aura. He doesn't make mistakes.
He's living rent-free in everybody's heads.
The other big question is, if Max is winning and Lando's fifth, if Oscar's ahead, would Oscar now actually help him beat Max in the championship?
Welcome to the Lusail International Circuit for F1 Nation's review of a gripping Qatar Grand Prix, which provided another huge twist in this thrilling title race. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me in the paddock is F1 TV commentator and former Renault driver Jolyon Palmer and Alpine's reserve driver Paul Aron. I mean, guys, the McLaren engineering debrief is going on as we speak. I'm guessing it's a tense affair, given that they gifted Max Verstappen the win through a strategy error. What answers would you guys be wanting?
Well, first of all, I'd want to know, just how have you come to this decision? Whenever you're in the car, we hear it so many times that drivers are wondering what's on, thinking of their own strategies. But you have to listen to the team, I believe. They have the information. But when you're led down the garden path, and there's a clangor like this, you want to know how did we get there? What are the procedures in place? And those glum faces on the McLaren guys, they're going to be just thinking, well, how have we managed to do it?
JP, was it obvious to you immediately that they got this wrong?
Yes. So, I mean, as soon as the rest of the field pitted, you knew it was done, because you know Max could close up behind the McLarens again. It basically just took out a pit stop. So at that point, it's 26 seconds for a pit stop. They're never going to make that back in the rest of the race. So it was a double whammy, really, because they also couldn't go very long in the race because it was mandated 25-lap stint. So if you had flexibility with what to do on the strategy, they maybe could have done a really long stint on the mediums and kept going and built the gap to everyone else. Maybe tried to do something different. But because it was mandated, It's basically, it had to be a two-stop, and everyone else in the field took one of their stops straight away, and the McLarens didn't.
I mean, Paul, they needed another safety car, didn't they? That was the only way that was going to work for them.
No, I mean, in a way, I agree with him. And to be fair, from my perspective, the only way I could kind of justify it is I thought maybe they wanted to leave Oscar out because they were afraid of giving away track position to Max. But then if you take Lando's situation, to be fair, it was a no-brainer to pit him because he had no first place to lose. So he wasn't giving away any track position. And then I thought maybe they didn't pit Lando either because they wanted to keep it fair between the two drivers. That's the only explanation I could give it. That once they realized that they messed it up with Oscar, they did, you know, they kept Lando on the same strategy, not to give one the edge over the other. But ultimately, I think everyone knew straight away that that was a mistake. And doesn't matter how quick you are, I think nowadays with these cars, even how close they are, you can't expect to make back a pit stop gap with just pure race pace. So, yeah, I think everyone knew that it was a bit of a mistake from them.
It reminded me a little bit, the strategy choice of Hamilton in Budapest in 2021, which was a race won by Alpine when Esteban Ocon won it. And Hamilton took he was the only driver to start on the grid. Started from pole. It was championship was at stake. He was in rivalry with Max Verstappen in that big year. It was halfway through the year, so it wasn't with all the pressures at that moment. But it was comedy, wasn't it? Because he went and lined up as the entire rest of the field went to the pits. So Mercedes in that moment thought if people follow them, it won't be disastrous. Or even if half the field follow them, it won't be disastrous. And if half the field had followed McLaren, it wouldn't have been as disastrous. And Max actually would have been stuck in traffic and it would have changed his race a lot. So in this sort of strategy stakes, you have to preempt what everyone else is going to do. And Red Bull called it right from second place. McLaren just didn't guess what anyone else would do. James Vowles spoke to us on F1 TV after the race and said the simulation said there was 16 seconds difference at the end of the race between pitting and not. That's not a particularly small number. So everyone else decided, okay, we'll have that free pit stop. And McLaren just didn't see it coming.
JP, you've worked inside a team. I mean, that 16 seconds you talk about that James Vowles gave you, that info would have been available to McLaren. I know it seems like an obvious question, but they had those stats, didn't they?
So they've got to use that to think, what would the Haas cars do? What would the Mercedes do? What would the Aston Martins do? And if everyone's getting the similar numbers, then you think, well, if they're all seeing this, then they're surely all going to pit. Now, you might think someone will do something different. Maybe Hamilton would stay out. He was on the soft tyre, so he was never going to do that. But you think some chances might back the field up that have pitted. But no one did. And it just goes to show that they just called this massively wrong in the end. All the teams, the strategists, have before a race, especially a race that's so set in stone like this, with a fixed two-stop, fixed tyre stint lengths, you have to be prepared for safety cars happening on certain laps. They should have had what happens if the safety car comes out lap 5, lap 10, somewhere in between. And they should have just known if we're in they're going to be first and third, whatever. What are we going to do? It shouldn't be reactionary. They have to make their own decision, and they were caught out.
What will have hurt more, Paul, last week in Las Vegas, or this mistake that gave away a 1-2?
I think it depends. Obviously, they know how much they can blame themselves. I know from this team, and I've also heard from other people, that it is pretty difficult this year with the skids and ride heights, and especially on a track like Vegas, where you can't really measure how much wear you're going to have because the bumps are inconsistent. And depending on which line you take, you're going to hit the bump harder or softer. And this can determine your plank wear a lot. So in terms of Vegas, I don't know, there might have been, you know, miscalculations, but at the same time, I know that it's pretty difficult on tracks like that for teams to get it right, because with these cars, you need to run them really low and stiff, and that's where you get the performance. And that's why you're always playing around with the limit of the plank wear. So, yeah, I think it depends more on which one they think is a bigger and more obvious mistake. I would imagine that, in a way, it's the mistake here. It was a bit easier to judge, but at the same time, of course, the Vegas one cost them a lot more. I mean, here they still scored points. Of course, they lost to Max, but they still scored points, whereas Vegas, they both ended up with a zero. So clearly, points-wise, that was a bigger loss. But which one will hurt more? I'm sure only McLaren know. But the only real explanation I can give to this race for the decision they took is that they were afraid that it's a race where it's hard to overtake, and they were afraid to give track position to Max with Oscar. Why they didn't pit Lando in that situation, I really cannot explain.
Papaya rules.
Well, that's what I mean. The only explanation for that would be that they keep it equal.
I don't even think they were engaged enough to give Lando instruction for if Max pits, you maybe follow him. Because all of that happens so quickly, doesn't it? They're all set in stone. And Lando said on the radio afterwards, he said, oh, I should have just followed him in then. But they weren't prepared for the chance of Max pitting, I don't think.
Well, maybe just because when after they decided with... Yeah, two chances. Either that decision was taken with Oscar and they agreed that that decision then carries on to Lando as well. Or they were actually, as you're saying, fully caught out, and that's why both cars, they didn't even talk about it.
Let's deal with the positives when it comes to Oscar Piastri, right? I mean, I know he'll be incredibly frustrated now, this Sunday night, but this P2 does end six races without a podium. He started the race from pole. He won the sprint race yesterday. There are a lot of positives for him to take from this weekend.
I think so. I think it almost makes it more painful for him that he's been driving so well, because suddenly it felt like, oh, there's a way that I can still win the championship. He's been struggling for the last seven races, no podiums. And then he turns up here, he's topping every session, has pole, keeps the lead at the start, does everything in his capability to win. And if he'd have won the race, then he might have been the one that's sort of 12 points, even 15 points away from Lando. But it would have been 12 were it to finish as they ended lap one. And it gets more painful, I think, when you realise, oh, I was so close. Whereas if he just had another weekend of finishing behind Lando, being a little bit slower, you accept responsibility for it because your pace isn't there. But kind of these bad decisions don't hurt so much, I think.
Why do you think this track suited Oscar Piastri so well? What was it? What brought Piastri back to life here?
I don't know. It's tricky to say. I mean, it's a very high-speed track. I've known Lando for a bit. He used to race with my brother, and he's always publicly said that high speed is his strongest point. So to be fair, it's a bit hard to say why this track suited Oscar. Of course, they know more how the car is, and surely, you know, some tracks with the car, with how the car behaves, suit better one driver, some tracks the other. I think we've seen that this year, that the pendulum has swung both ways. So yeah, it's a bit tricky to say, but going back to that point of it being a positive weekend for Oscar, I know firsthand the feeling of you're doing almost everything perfect. Of course, you can never be perfect, but you've done everything as close to perfect as possible, and you're expecting that back from the team as well, and you don't get it. A thing that is very hard to accept. So I think in that sense, Oscar still did a good job to keep his head and not make any further mistakes, because if you have done such a good weekend, no mistakes, a near-perfect job, and you know, you get the win taken out of your hands, there was still a long race to go, and there were still many occasions where he could have made a mistake. I mean, Lando had a mistake where he almost dropped it. I think it was in turn 14. It was at the end of the very quick triple hander. Oscar also had a moment there. But yeah, in these situations, I mean, the earlier you accept that that's the new reality, the better it is. So yeah, in that sense, I think Oscar did well.
Another strategic point, had Oscar fitted soft tyres for that final stint instead of the hards, do you think it would have made any difference in terms of the inroads?
The damage was done, I think. It didn't really matter what happened for Oscar's race afterwards. The fact that he lost basically 26 seconds to Max with 50 laps to try and make up for it, I don't think the soft tyre decision would have helped. I think either way, he was a bit stuck in second. I was a little bit more surprised that they didn't try and run softs at the end for Lando, just to try and create more of an offset to go and chase Antonelli and Sainz. We see time and time again that McLaren are so conservative on the race strategy. They're very conservative. And Lando didn't have, he had just over 10 laps to run. Low fuel. Soft tyre is a much grippier tyre than the hard. So I think I might have gone a bit punchier at the end of the race, but it probably wouldn't have changed the world for them either. I think the big mistake was just not pitting at the safety car.
It's the most wonderful time of the year and the perfect season to treat the Formula One fan in your life. The official F1 store has everything you need to make this festive season unforgettable. From teamwear and caps to models and collectibles, you'll find exclusive F1 products and limited edition gear you won't get anywhere else. With fast worldwide delivery, you can get your gifts on the grid just in time for Christmas, no pit stops required. Head over to f1store.formula1.com and make this festive season full of speed, style, and F1 spirit.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
What did you guys make of Lando's performance this weekend? He comes in 24 points ahead of everybody. A win would have sealed the deal, would have won the world championship for him. Yet, it was the indecisive Lando that has been there at earlier stages of the season. I think of his second run in Q3, that mistake that he made. We've seen him make mistakes here in Qatar before. Yet, the last three races, he's been absolutely perfect. So, do you think he was feeling the pressure?
I think so. The McLaren car was so quick, but Oscar turned up and it was just not the cleanest weekend at any moment. His sprint qualifying, he made a little mistake and then had a poor run plan at the end of it. He thought he could have had sprint pole, didn't. He thought he had the pace for actual pole, but made a mistake on that final lap. The provisional pole, he'd already done enough at the start of Q3, but the track evolution means that you've always got to be there on the last lap and he missed it. The start was tricky on the dirty side of the grid. Everyone on the even numbers lost out at the front of the field. So you always knew he was going to be under pressure from Max at that point. But then in the race, the error at turn 14 was a pretty big one. I mean, that could have been catastrophic for him, but he kept it out of the barriers. It felt like he lost confidence after that and dropped away.
He could have also had damage. We don't know about that.
He could have done as well.
Because our drivers, when they've had those sort of curb strikes, most of the time they come away with damage.
Pierre did a similar thing, didn't he, on the opening lap?
Well, Pierre went through the gravel as well, and he actually had a pretty big error loss because of that, due to damage, around 10 points, actually. So, those curb strikes can be very costly. So we don't know how much Lando lost with that.
You also, I think you second-guess yourself a little bit when you think there might be damage. You've had a big moment, you've run it through the gravel, and the corners, they need so much commitment, they're so fast, that if you're not sure that the car is perfect afterwards, it's difficult to lean on it 100%, especially when something goes wrong, you go off again, it can be worse. So the pace seemed okay for him at the end of the race, but hey, it wasn't a disastrous weekend for Lando, it just wasn't perfect, and Oscar was very good, and Max in the end applied the pressure.
Hang on, can I play devil's advocate to that? You know, he starts second, he finishes fourth in what is clearly the fastest car.
Yeah,
you say it's not a bad weekend. It's
in terms of his driving performance, I don't think it's disastrous. He only finished fourth because the strategy was hopeless. If you look at the performance between them, there was very little in qualifying. We discussed small errors that went towards Oscar, but we're still talking like 1/10 of performance against a guy that we're saying is on fire this weekend, so that's not bad. And in the race, it was 3 seconds for a lot of the race, 3.5, went to 4 seconds, then he went off and it went out a little bit more. It's not a good weekend, but it's not terrible. It's just we're at crunch time, aren't we, and Max is looming.
It's been a bit of a trend of Lando that on his day, on his weekend, he can be perfect, he can be super quick. But to be fair, he's still, you know, he's not been in F1 that long and he's not been in title fights that long. You remember when Max came into the sport, he was always super rapid, but he also made a lot of mistakes. And I think it's part of the learning. And, you know, Max has had the time to develop, you know, hone his skill. He's never lost his speed, but what he's gained is consistency, because when he arrived to F1, he was super quick, but a lot of mistakes. Maybe that's, you know, how Lando will develop, and in the coming years, you know, that will be a part of him as well. But I think this year and also last year, we saw very often that on his weekend, he's on it the whole weekend and he can be perfect. And when it's not his weekend, mistakes start to creep in. And you know, in those sort of weekends where you don't feel 100%, it's almost better to sort of manage how much you're pushing. And in that sense, I think finally how qualifying ended up him being second, I think if he didn't feel good in the car, that was good damage limitation for him. And ultimately in the race, without the strategy, if he ended up in that top three, you know, I agree, if he won the race, he would have sealed the championship. But still finishing the top three, he's keeping himself in a pretty good position. So I don't know what's going on in his head. But, you know, sometimes people don't feel 100%. You know, he's done a very good job the past few weekends. And it's only natural that there will be a weekend where he's not going to feel 100%. And those are the weekends that make the difference. Now, when we come to Max, that's the most impressive thing about Max, because he never seems to have these bad weekends. They happen very rarely. There's been cases, that Barcelona case that he also admitted, where he went a bit over the top. And when he was younger, there was a lot more of these mistakes. But over the years, Max has gotten quicker and quicker, but mainly the big improvement has been just his consistency. And it seems like every day is his day. Every weekend is his weekend. Doesn't matter the car, doesn't matter, you know, the circuit. He's always there. And that's really by far the most impressive thing about Max, is how he has built this confidence and this understanding of how to always get the best out of himself.
I feel like Max has this aura now as well. So when they were lining up on the grid today, Lando second, Max third, I was thinking to myself, firstly, Max, you know he's going to attack because he has to beat Lando to stay in the title race. Everyone knows this. Lando will know this. In the same way that he covered off Max so aggressively in Vegas and then distracted himself to outbreak himself and go off, I thought, how long is it going to be from the lights going out for him to go and check that left mirror and see where Max is? Because it's Max, and he just has this aura. He doesn't make mistakes. He's so fast. The team are amazingly good as well. They barely miss a beat on strategy. The pit stops, they're relentless. And that gets in your head as well when you're a driver. I don't know if you had drivers when you're coming through, and if you see them in your mirrors, you think, oh, this is going to be hard. Or if they're starting behind you.
But not because they had that sort of aura, because they had the aura that they make stupid mistakes and they crash into. That's why I was afraid of a few drivers. But, you know, also, you need to look at it from a realistic perspective as well. Why Max has this aura is because of the journey he's had. Because when he arrived to Formula 1, he was super quick, and he was a nightmare to others because he took every chance he had. He would always send it down inside. He would always try to make an aggressive, risky move. He never backed out. And, you know, in the beginning years, that cost him a lot. He was crashing a lot. He was making a lot of mistakes. But ultimately, at some point, the drivers start to respect you. And when you're given that time, that room to make these mistakes, you know, you build upon them, you build this aura, and at some point, everyone's going to respect you. I would say some drivers, they don't have the time and the trust from the people around them to do these things. I think if you're under some managements and some teams, if you make that many mistakes that maybe Max was doing in the beginning and risking so much, you might end up actually out of a seat. But Max had the freedom because he had the trust of the people around him, and he had the speed, he had the freedom to make these mistakes, build this aura around him. Now he's built this consistency, and that's just become his package. You know, everyone around him knows that he's going to send it down the inside. He's going to try every risky move. And I actually really liked what George did in Singapore, where George was lining up first and Max was second. And then in the post-quali interview, he said, well, this guy's probably going to send it down the inside anyway. He's pretty good at that. So, you know, hopefully we don't crash. He said something like that.
He's living rent-free in everybody's heads.
So, yes. But in a way, I feel like George in that interview took the ball back from Max, let's say. Because he put it kind of in Max's head that, you know, Max always sends it down inside, and maybe it made him double think that this time he should be a bit more careful. I don't know, but I like that comment from George because it sort of seemed like he played Max's game there.
Totally agree on Max and the consistency and the speed. But JP, tell me something about Red Bull and sprint races, all right? That one practice session on a Friday morning doesn't feel like it's enough for them at the minute, because set up for the sprint, they were all over the place, as they were at the last sprint in Brazil.
I thought they'd turned a corner. I thought this was the big thing that Laurent Mekies tried to sort out when he came in, was them turning up with a car that could hit the ground and be a bit better. They've struggled in the past. It was exactly the same story last year. Max was eighth in the sprint. The car was nowhere. It's bouncing. It's not good. And he took pole and won the Grand Prix. But that was just felt like it was the norm. This year, there was a period where he won the sprint in Belgium. So he showed that they can get it done quite quickly. But the last few, they've just arrived with the car not in a good window. And he's very sensitive to the bouncing that he has, inconsistencies that didn't really seem to affect Yuki. He had a really good sprint. But it just wasn't well suited for Max. And then they managed to sort the car out. He's still driving with a lot of understeer. You can see when he's in qualifying, it's not how Max wants to drive the car, I think. He's still not particularly happy with it. But he's driving around it well. Did a great job to out-qualify George anyway. It was only 100th between them. The whole outcome could have been different then. But managed to get third. And as I said, the race didn't need to be amazing for him. The strategy landed on his lap.
Is that another thing about Max? Is his adaptability? He said after the race today that, you know, he still had that understeer from qualifying in the race, yet you wouldn't have known from his lap times.
I mean, it's sort of the same story here, to be honest, in Alpine. If you look at our weekend, it was pretty similar. The sprint qualifying was horrible. And then we went to the actual qualifying on Saturday, and Pierre was in Q3. And there was a possibility to do a very good result also in Q3. It was just they didn't have any new tyres left because they never expected to be there. Because the day before in sprint qualifying, they were last. So it was a bit the same story that I think there's just some cars that have a much bigger window than others. But maybe the ultimate performance is not as good. So it seems like the McLarens, you drop them on the ground and they are super quick straight away. But it seems like they're not making much improvement throughout the weekend. So maybe they have a more sort of, the performance curve is a bit more linear, whereas the Red Bull car, and I would also say the Alpine car, seem a bit more like a pyramid. If you get it right and you're at the peak of it, it's super quick, but it drops off either side very quickly. And if you don't get it right, which is normally what happens when you throw a car on the ground and you have that sort of very peaky car performance, it is difficult in the beginning. And probably that's why the sprint weekends are hard for Red Bull. And, you know, the more time they get, the more they're able to hone that balance. And this we have also heard from everyone, that one of Max's biggest strengths is just how detailed and how good he is with his feedback. And of course, that helps the team massively as well to set up the car. And it's difficult to say how much of it is actually Max's work with the team and how much of it is just the car being difficult to put in a good window.
Let's discuss the next week of these three drivers' lives, all right? So Lando Norris leads the World Championship with 408. 12 points back is Max Verstappen. 16 points back is Oscar Piastri. What does this week look like for these guys in terms of, will they struggle to sleep? How difficult is it to zone away from Formula One? How important is it to forget about Formula One? Just, JP, both of you, I'd love your thoughts on how they will each deal with the build-up to Abu Dhabi.
I think it's the hardest on Lando by far. When the checkered flag was flown in Vegas, he had a 42-point advantage on Max, 30 on Oscar. And suddenly it changed. And it's changed again here to be 12 points. So after Vegas, I mean, he must have written Max out of the title fight, really. Max won the race, but it was just too little too late. And when you think you've had one hand on the trophy, you think all I have to do is basically finish the race, turn up and finish, and it's mine. And suddenly it's changed, and you now need to actually go and perform. It becomes so much harder when they've been etching his name in it, and then they scrub it out and say, oh, this could be anyone's now. That plays on your mind a lot, I think. So he's going to have to regroup. The mental pressures are all on Lando. Oscar's got absolutely nothing to lose. He's going to go and try and thrive on this form again. I think he'll sleep okay. He'll be a bit annoyed now, but he can turn up and just start swinging. And that's all Max ever does, is turn up and start swinging. So it's Lando that's got to reset. And he doesn't need to do anything special in Abu Dhabi, but sometimes doing ordinary things under big pressure is tricky.
I agree with Julian. I mean, of course, leaving from this weekend, Max is the guy with all the candy. He's very happy. I think Oscar is in the middle ground. You know, he's happy he's got his form back. And Lando is the kid with no candy. He's very sad. And ultimately, I think the best thing for Lando is to almost like have a kind of memory reset and not remember where he is. And he would just look at the points and understand he's leading the championship. And, you know, forget about the rest of the season, basically. But he's human.
You can't do that, can you?
You can't do that. But that's always, I know from a racing driver's point of view, that's sometimes what you need to do. Because the fact is, he's leading the championship still. And he's still got a very decent points lead. And, you know, if for example, he was a few races ago, he wasn't leading it, and he took the lead of the championship this weekend, and he had that points lead, he would be super happy. But he's taking the context into account, and he's had two weekends that haven't played out how he wanted, and he's obviously not feeling happy. And that's the biggest challenge he has. He needs to try and reset that as much as possible, because the problem is, when someone smells blood in Formula One, your life gets much more difficult. And, you know, in Abu Dhabi, Max and Oscar know that Lando will just try to bring it home. And very often when you kind of take a step back and you start trying to bring things home, you start to take less risks, other people take more risks. And it's going to end up Max putting him in a position in the race where either Lando backs out or they crash, and Lando will back out, and Oscar will do the same. And this can be a, you know, effect that just goes on and on and on. And I've had this before. I remember in Formula 3, I had this where I just had to secure a second place in the championship. I was starting second, and as long as I finished in front of all the other guys who I was fighting with for that second place, I would have stayed second. And I tried to play it safe in turn one, and one guy just dived down the inside and pushed me off, so I lost positions there. Tried to play it safe in turn two, another guy sent it, lost positions there, and that's what happens. When you leave room, when you play it safe, other people take advantage.
Yeah, but the moral of that story is to push.
Yeah, so here's my analogy. I know you guys are big into your paddle, so it's like match point.
I'm not that.
It's right, okay. Big into your tennis, big into your paddle. Net sports, match point Norris. But when you're there, you just hope that the other guy's going to hit it in the net. Make it easy for me. So you just keep tapping it back and hope that they're going to end up putting it out, putting it in the net, and you just win. And it's going to take still perfection from Piastri or Verstappen to win it. But they're not hitting it in the net. They just keep getting it back in, making Lando play, and then eventually he's making more little mistakes that keep the ball rolling on. And when that happens, it just becomes harder. You think, I could have won this before. I could have won it now. He's still the big favourite, but they are making it hard for him.
Honestly, just to top it off, the best thing Lando can do at the moment is not care about it. If he left
Good
this,
luck with that.
The best he could do is leave the paddock tonight, not think about Formula 1 for 3-4 days, delete his social media, have nothing to do with Formula 1, hang out with his family, and he's raced the whole year. He knows the car. He'll do the preparation he need, and that's it. You know, 3-4 days, not thinking about it, rock up and just do his job. That's the best thing he could do. But I've been in that position, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be thinking about this every day. And the problem is, if you do think about it every day, by the time you get to the track, you're going to be tired already.
I still think the ball's in his court. All he has to do is finish on the podium, regardless of anyone else, and it's there. The other big question is, if Max is winning and Lando's fifth, which is a bad result, in normal circumstances, if Oscar's ahead, would Oscar now actually help him beat Max in the championship? That's another question.
Ooh,
I think he would. I think yeah? I think the team would ask him to, and I think he would.
I think the same. I think whichever way it would go, if the drivers need to swap position for one of them to win it, the team would ask them to do it.
So that helps him as well. There's that knowledge that if Oscar is winning, he has to be in the top five. If Max is winning, he has to be in the top four, or maybe the top five if Oscar's going to be friendly. Unknown, but possible.
This episode is sponsored by Square, the toolkit built to help you run your business, keep up with demand, and grow through the busiest time of year. With the holidays just around the corner, that means more customers, more orders, and a bigger need to stay ahead of any last-minute chaos. And Square helps you handle it all from one place. Whether it's taking payments, managing inventory, selling online, or staffing up, it's all covered. And right now, listeners can get up to $200 off Square hardware when you sign up at square.com/go/F1Nation. That's SQUARE.com/go/F1Nation. Square gives you real-time insights, helps you track what's selling and when, and grows with you. So whether you're running a pop-up, a cafe, or a full retail store, you're never out of step. And I always notice when a local shop or restaurant's got things running smoothly. Fast checkouts, loyalty perks, digital receipts, and more often than not, they're using Square. And honestly, it makes a huge difference. The holiday rush is coming. Square helps you run faster, sell smarter, and stay in control, even when things get busy. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/F1Nation. That's SQUARE.com/go/F1Nation. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
There's more to come from Qatar in a moment, but I wanted to let you know about the other official F1 podcast you can listen to this week. Esteban Ocon and his race engineer Laura Muller join me on F1 Beyond the Grid. That's out on Wednesday, and you can watch our chat on the official F1 YouTube channel. And this week's F1 Explains is all about Ford's return to Formula One with Red Bull Racing in 2026. Just search for F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Explains on your podcast app.
Podium in Qatar! What the hell?
I think this is just happiness.
Not emotional.
Who would have thought?
Smooth operator. Smooth operator.
Now, amid all the drama in the championship fight, Carlos Sainz climbed from P7 to P3 to score his second podium for Williams in his first season with the team. And I don't understand what went on at Williams. They came here expecting it to be the hardest weekend of the year, and yet from FP1, Sainz in particular has been on it.
So they don't like traditionally circuits with long corners. It's why Barcelona was really bad for them. A few other circuits,
Hungary
wasn't good. Hungary. And that's exactly what you've got here. Is on paper a horror show of a circuit for them. So they tried an experimental setup. I don't know exactly what that is, but that's what they've been talking about all weekend. And Carlos has been flying. Alex Albon's been doing all right, but Carlos is thriving at the moment. And I just love the way when he ends up somewhere near the front, it's like he's not in a Williams anymore. It's like it's just a blue car, but it could be a Mercedes or it could be a... you know, a Ferrari on a better weekend, because he just feels like a front runner when he's suddenly up there. It's not like he's getting his elbows out having to defend. He's just putting in the laps and winding up on the podium.
And when, you know, Lando was a couple of places behind him, I think initially, I think a lot of other people thought, well, Lando's just going to get through Antonelli and Sainz pretty quickly. And yet...
yeah, Sainz didn't think that, though, did he?
He absolutely didn't. But and maybe that is exactly your point, isn't it?
Well, he said at this pace he's not coming through, because he knew he had saved a bit of tyres left and just thought, oh, if we hammer it, then he's on a hard tyre as well. He's not going to have a big advantage on us. And I like that about Carlos. I think he's showing all his talent at the moment. I love that Williams took a punt on a... well, not really a punt, is it? But they forked out on a race-winning driver. So a midfield team have got a really great driver lineup. And it rewards them in these sort of moments. He's a thinking driver that can work things out on the fly and just delivers the great results.
Do you think this was a better podium for Sainz than Baku?
It's a bit difficult to judge that. But, I mean, of course, Baku, the quali result was a bit lucky for him in a way because of the conditions. But here I would say it was fully fair and hard fought, even though in Baku also the race was fairly fought by him. But I think James Vowles has publicly said it as well, that... Carlos is very, very good when he's in a happy place with the team he's in, with the environment he's in, and with the car he's in. And of course, when you go into a new team, a new car, a new environment, that takes time. And I think sometimes people don't understand or they don't appreciate enough how valuable it is to be in a team for a long time, have a say in the car development, know all the engineers, and just know the environment like your hand. And, you know, for Carlos to come in, it was always going to be difficult in the beginning of the year with Albon being in that team for so long, knowing everyone, and obviously the team is listening to him. So it takes time before they really start to trust you, before you really get to have the car where you want to have it. And it seems like at the end of this season, Carlos is starting to be happy with that Williams. He's happy with the environment he's in. And clearly he's starting to show very, very good performances. So
Williams is an extraordinary story, isn't it? 65% of their workforce is new or has been there less than 3 years. So that takes time to gel.
How did you get that stat?
It's a great stat, isn't it? But it's that takes time, doesn't it?
Formula One teams, change takes time anyway. Any sort of change, let alone a massive workforce turnover. So you have to say, James Vowles is doing a really good job putting the staff in place, getting the right drivers, all building towards next year's regulations as well. They didn't think that they were going to be particularly competitive this season. I mean, Carlos, if you told him he'd have more podiums than Lewis this year, he never would believe you at the start of the season. But he signed for next year. That's the really encouraging thing for Williams. And the trajectory, as you say, the staff turnover that they've got.
It's not so much turnover, it's just growth.
Exactly, the growth. But, and it's putting the right people in the right places as well. It's super impressive. It's back to the signing of Carlos as well. He was a Ferrari driver last year. He was winning races for Ferrari. Obviously, was dropped by them. But James Vowles tried so hard to get him on board.
Can we just segue from Carlos into talking about Ferrari? Because Ferrari have been a mystery these last two races, all right? This has been a difficult car all year, but that car has been particularly bad these last two races. How much are they missing the technical expertise of someone like Carlos Sainz?
I don't think I've put it on Carlos. You know, now that he's gone, the ship is veering.
Sorry to interrupt,
right,
but he did say at the end of last year, if this car wins the world championship in 2025, remember how strong they were at the end of last year? He said he would quietly take a bit of credit for that because he thought he was responsible for some of the technical direction that the team had gained.
He's trying to steer away from that comment now.
Does he
the credit anymore?
Yeah, but that's why I mean, one driver. We're 12 months on from Carlos leaving the team. One driver, it's very difficult for them to steer so many directions. And the cars are so complex. They've also got Lewis coming in, who's not exactly short of experience and a few ideas himself. So I don't feel like they're missing Carlos particularly. I mean,
well, what have they been missing these last two races? Because I went trackside and that car looked horrendous this weekend.
Aero efficiency. This circuit is all about aero efficiency. It's relatively high downforce. You've got one long straight, loads of fast corners. Every time we pan to a Ferrari, particularly Leclerc, at any moment over low fuel, he looks like he's about to spin. He's been in the gravel every other session and the car's just loose. It seems like it's missing downforce. They could add downforce, but then they'd lose the efficiency. So they've not been able to find the window. That's the surprising thing. With taking Lewis out of Parc Fermé for the sprint, making more changes, I'm amazed that they've not been able to at some point find a sensible window for that car.
I mean, from the outside, looking at the onboards and everything, it just looks like the car is very inconsistent. But I think that's a very difficult question to answer, because if we take a comparison, remember that dominant year that Red Bull had with this generation? You know, look where we are now. Now it's McLaren dominating. And in the end, it's the same generation of cars. And it's not a big, you know, change between the years of how much the teams are able to develop these cars. So I think it's just, you know, every year people are developing the car, trying to make it better. Every year people bring upgrades. And what we often see is that the upgrades don't make the cars quicker, because ultimately these upgrades, these developments, they need to blend in and they need to kind of glue properly together with the car. And sometimes when that doesn't happen, maybe ultimately you're making the car quicker because you're adding load to it. But if you're also making it more inconsistent, it can result in a slower package with the driver and the car. So, you know, that could be the case also in Ferrari, that it's not a slow car. Maybe all the upgrades and everything they've kind of bolted onto that car are not finessing together. And because of that, it's just a very difficult package to deliver with.
I mean, I know the LaSalle track has, you know, as you say, JP, lots of long, fast corners. But let's not forget that Charles Leclerc was on the podium in this car at the Spanish Grand Prix, right? And Barcelona is an aero track. Do you remember in
But they
qualifying,
weren't that competitive there.
But do you
they
remember
were,
in qualifying at Silverstone?
They were good at Silverstone.
Yeah. So I just want to know how they've... I mean, Paul, the points you make are very valid, but why here? Why have they struggled so much?
It's obviously a one-off on top of it not being their absolute strength. they've been better in recent races. They don't know, Tom. So why do you think I'm going to be able to tell you this right now?
Well, Carlos Sainz thinks you're one of the best analysts here. So.
Are we looking at a future steward, by the way?
Yeah, that's for racing incidents, not for how Ferrari should set up their car.
I mean, it's the end of a very frustrating year for Ferrari. They can no longer finish second in the Constructors' Championship, which was, even at mid-season when we knew how competitive McLaren were, that was still the goal. That is no longer on the cards. I mean, Fred Vasseur said on Friday in the press conference, he said, we turned the tap off on this car, talking about aero development in the wind tunnel, back in April.
They better be good next year.
I mean, that's the point, isn't it? If you do that...
I mean, we better be good next year.
Yeah, because Alpine did the same, yes.
Because we did it at the beginning of the year.
But the expectation for Ferrari coming into this year, Paul, was so much greater. You know, having finished just 14 points behind McLaren at the end of last year, just look at the season they've had. I mean, you can feel the pressure. You can see the disconsolate Lewis Hamilton asked after... What was it after the sprint, I think, you know, looking ahead, how you see the rest of the weekend, the weather's going to be nice, was his only answer.
Yeah, but for Lewis, so that was sprint qualifying, and what was he, 18th, nothing to look forward to, that's all horrendous. He's been on the nightmare the last couple of weekends, was told to concentrate on the racing by John Elkann. And then that sprint qualifying, I'm looking forward to seeing what the weather's nice. And then it does the sprint, take the car out of Parc Fermé, start from the end of the pit lane. And his feedback was the car's worse? From that, he's just in an absolute doom spiral, isn't he? Obviously, the car was a pig this weekend.
But to be fair, Charles
horrendous.
Said the same thing.
Yeah, no, I believe him. But you thought, can it get worse after sprint qualifying was more my point. He was already completely depressed about the situation. And then it did get worse. So they need a reset. And Lewis needs a major he needs a winter. Completely. It's difficult to see how he's going to turn up next week with a spring in his step. And
well, wait, what kind of a winter have we got? There are 36 days between the Sunday of Abu Dhabi and when the cars hit the track in Barcelona for pre-season testing. That is as short a winter as I can remember.
I don't need any winter at all. I can get going right now. You know, give me a chance and I'm ready to drive.
What about other stories from the weekend then? Quick word on the Mercedes. Antonelli and Russell finishing 5th and 6th.
Fine. Antonelli obviously made the mistake right at the end, which cost him a couple of points. Russell had a mistake at the start. We never really saw it, I don't think, how he dropped down to 7th. But from there, he was doomed, stuck in traffic. And that was a shame because I thought he was pretty good this weekend until then. Good points for Mercedes overall, but not that whelming.
They're looking good for P2 in the World Championship, which was their stated aim and has been for a while from Toto Wolff, the team principal. Look, quick word on Aston Martin. Alonso, P7 in both the sprint and the Grand Prix, showing how wily he is, how determined he still is.
But you know what? He went off in the sprint at the final turn through the gravel and he had a spin in the Grand Prix. So considering, he did really well, didn't he? But it was rare to see him make sort of two unforced errors in a race.
But what does that tell you? What a handful the Aston is? Or how hard he was pushing?
I think also we're overlooking how brutal and physical this race was. So I think the concentration that was required, when you see small mistakes from people, it's so tough. I think it's physically the hardest one. Well,
and the mandated stint lengths of 25 laps, does that make it harder for the drivers?
Yeah, I don't think there was much management and you could see it from everyone. I mean, anyone who was under pressure was pushing. Kimi was pushing and he made some mistakes. Oscar and Lando made mistakes. I didn't see Max making a mistake, but that's Max anyway. We saw Fernando making mistakes. I saw both of our drivers making mistakes. I think it's just a track where the car is so sensitive to wind. The car is, you know, so aero-dependent that any little change in wind or conditions can make a big change on the car. And also, any little change in terms of following another car can make a big difference on your aero performance. Plus the fact that you're pushing flat out, you're not leaving much margin. And the moment there is this little slight change which changes the aero performance, you know, it's very easy to make a mistake. And most of the mistakes were made in high-speed corners where that aero performance is the most important. So, yeah, and to be fair, Julian had a fair point. I think this is, at least for your neck, by far the most physical race there is. I mean, last year when I raced in Formula 2, I didn't feel my neck in any track ever, and when I finished the weekend here for the first time, I thought my neck's a bit tired. So
was the only track in F2 where I felt that my neck was a little bit tired. So for sure, for the Formula 1 guys who are carrying, you know, five times the speed that we used to carry in Formula 2, it must be very difficult on their neck, and it's warm, and yeah, it's definitely
it's an amazing
one.
Track, isn't it? Or is it only one corner under 100 kph? Everything else is
underneath fourth gear, third gear at turn six. Everything else is sort of medium to high speed, and even that's not exactly low speed.
And the drivers love it.
I love it.
Way.
As well. It's my favorite track. Yeah, I hold the F2 track record here. I won here last year. Best track I've ever driven.
Look, before we leave this topic of Aston Martin, JP, I did just quickly want your thoughts on Adrian Newey becoming the team principal there. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, very, yeah. I didn't... I mean, he's such a great technical brain, but we're seeing more sort of engineers moving into team principal roles. It's kind of the fashion at the moment, isn't it, for a lot of the teams. Didn't think Adrian would do that. I don't know if we're going to see more from the management of Aston Martin, if there's going to be things changing, because I can't imagine him spending all his time, or spending too much of his time, on media duties, on extracurricular, dealing with sponsors, dealing with commercial partners and all that. He is a racer through and through.
It smacks of a chief exec coming in alongside him, doesn't
it? Exactly, that's what I think. And that's been the form for McLaren, doing that with Stella and Zak Brown. It feels like that's going to be the move for Aston Martin.
Christian Horner?
Rumoured. If they brought him in with Honda engines, Christian Horner, Adrian Newey, Max Verstappen out of contract at the end of next year, you start to think there could be a power play.
Wasn't that rumour shut down by Mr. Stroll himself in the factory? I don't know.
He did say that in the factory. If you're wondering when he addressed the staff, we are not talking to Christian Horner, but that's not to say it won't happen in the future. You know, this is Formula One, anything can happen, right? But,
and if not him, I think they're looking for someone like him to come in alongside Adrian. I just cannot believe that it's going to be Adrian as team principal and no one in the sort of, like, he'll look after the technical side. I'm sure he's chuffed to have a lot of autonomy on, in terms of decision making on the key technical personnel. It feels to me like the big thing for him is to have the key decision making and not have to deal with a sort of team principal in inverted commas ahead of him. But there's got to be someone to come in at least alongside him to deal with the other parts.
And JP, just to be clear, if you don't take the stewarding role that Carlos Sainz wants you to take,
are you going
to
link me to it?
Yeah, come on.
What a weekend for me. Could be a steward, could be a CEO of Aston Martin, is it?
All right, guys, what a wonderful chat. Thank you both very much for your time. Let's end this with, I want a driver of the day from both of you. JP, who is it?
Carlos Sainz.
Why?
I've got a Williams to a podium. Consummate, dealt with a little bit of damage at the end as well. I don't think we mentioned. That's too good.
I mean, I could name three guys for three different reasons.
Name three, but give us a winner.
First one I would name is Oscar. Because he didn't do anything wrong, did he? He did a good race. He was the quickest car on track. He's done a perfect weekend. Just bad strategy call. And that's what won this race. I could give it to Max. I mean, in the end, he got gifted the win by the McLarens. But he still won the race. And
overtook Lando into turn one. Important.
Yeah, and
did everything
and
he needed to do.
Still the classic Max that, you know, as Zak Brown said, is from like a horror movie. The main character that never disappears, always comes back. And the third one will be Carlos Sainz, because I think no one expected that. So,
and the winner is?
That would be my top three. I mean, honestly, I could name the winner by just who I like the most. Actually, now I dug myself a bigger hole here.
You've made it harder.
I mean, from a driver's perspective, I would put Oscar.
Okay, your mate Oscar.
If I thought I was allowed nominations, I would have gone for the same.
Would you have gone for the same three? They were the standouts.
They were all definitely the standouts, yeah.
For me, the standout driver of the race and the weekend was Oscar Piastri. Given where he's been at the last few races, to see him come back and drive with such confidence. I mean, just look at the way he overtook Kimi Antonelli versus how hard it was for Lando Norris in the same car in this Grand Prix. I thought that just summed up everything about Oscar's weekend. He's been perfect. So Oscar for me, Oscar for Paul, and Carlos for JP.
Carlos. But Oscar can ride the wave, can't he? Into Abu Dhabi.
Just to be clear, I mean, let's...
I like, know, the others too.
Let's cross that comment about how I would choose my favourite one. I mean, I don't have a favourite Formula 1 driver.
Guys, thank you both very much for your time. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Cheers, TT.
Now, for more reaction and analysis from all the weekend's action here in Qatar, go to F1.com, the official F1 app, or at F1 on social media. You can also watch the race highlights on the F1 YouTube channel. Now, next up, it's that mouth-watering title showdown in Abu Dhabi, where we'll crown the 2025 FIA Formula One World Champion. We'll be back on Thursday to preview that race. But for now, thank you very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.